Welcome to The Common Sense Show with your host, Dave Hodges. We discuss a variety of topics here, including the deep state, the New World Order, Agenda 21. There is no one, no topic beyond Dave's reach, because as you know, you can't dodge the Hodge.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Hodges. I'm the host of The Common Sense Show, and we are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And we have a terrific show for you in this segment. We have Patrick Wood, and we're going to be talking about our cities and our cities of the future, and more importantly, how you're not going to like the cities of the future. And I think we're going to hear about some things that we can do. In fact, I know that. But before we go to Pat, we got to let you know that there's a couple of sponsors that makes this show possible. So we want to make sure we give them fair mention. First is My Patriot Food Supply, and we like to call them preparewithdave.com because that's the website you go to. But listen, no GMOs, no glyphosates, restaurant quality, 70% off sale, 2 and 4 week packets, and you can buy multiples. And why do we do that? Because you should have a minimum of 6 months, but that can be really intimidating for a lot of people and beyond some people's financial reach. So we scaled it down to help out the average person. And so how do you get yours? Go to preparewithdave.com. That's preparewithdave.com. And where you have food, you have to have water. And the Alexa Pure Pro is the very best that's out there. Cleans out over 2,000 chemicals, including chromium-6. Remember Aaron Brockovich? That's right, chromium-6 causes cancer. Well, this cleans it out. And 218 million homes have chromium-6. There's pharmaceuticals, there's lead. You get the idea. Our water in America is not good. And the Alexa Pure Pro, well, that's a place to get started to correct this. And you also can take a version of this and you can bug out with it. You'll never have trouble finding standing water, but you'll have trouble purifying it. But not if you have the Alexa Pure Pro. There's a special going on right now. You have to mention my name to get it. Go to waterwithdave.com. That's waterwithdave.com. Well, it's always great to have Patrick Wood on. He's no stranger. He's been coming on the show for years and years. Pat, I want to welcome the show. I'm glad you could be with us.
Thanks, Dave. Good to be here, as always.
Well, the march towards enslaving us in our own cities continues. Is that a fair way to put it?
Well, that's one way to put it. The whole issue with smart cities has nothing to do with advanced city design, as some people want us to believe. You know, like, wow, we're going to redesign the cities and we're going to have this new form of urban living and so on. This is not a redesign at all. This is basically overlaying technology in order to surveil the people that live in the city. And that's about it, I hate to say.
That's, here, I got to take the cough button off there. But Pat, when we say smart cities, for people who are listening for the first time, specifically, what are you talking about?
Well, the idea of a smart city is to install sensors around the city, on light poles, in roads, in intersections and bus stops and stuff like that. And the idea is to implant these, to embed these sensors to keep track of all the movement of people within the city, within the community, whatever the target is. And the concept that's being used is called geospatial intelligence. And that's a big word. We all understand geography. Like, okay, you got a map. There's Phoenix. There's Surprise. You know, these are things that don't move, right? There's South Mountain. They don't move. People move around. So the idea of geospatial intelligence is to map all the people and how they move and what's normal for them and where do they go and who do they, you know, what do they do when they get there and that sort of thing. Geospatial management is the the discipline of geography overlaid on people that move around all the time. This means that the data that's collected on people as they move around is absolutely ubiquitous. It's everywhere, and it becomes a permanent part of your file. It's a big concept. We can see it most easily right now in China. China's already a technocracy, certified. They have hundreds of millions of cameras around the country, and they're all hooked into an artificial intelligence system that could recognize you. And in fact, this software is so powerful at this point that they brag that they can locate anybody anywhere within like 2 to 5 minutes of putting out the order to locate. That's pretty frightening. This kind of surveillance we have never, ever seen in the world before, Dave. That's the problem with it. We've never seen this before. People are having trouble processing that this is real. I mean, you remember Alvin Toffler's book?
Future Shock.
In the 70s, Future Shock?
Yes.
Future Shock is upon us. People are like, when they really start to understand it, they're like stunned. It's like, I don't get it. It's like magic or something, you know? It's like it just overtakes them. But it's here and it's now. We see it in China, big time. We see it in India now, big time. They're developing a national biometric database to be able to identify everybody. And it's coming here, too, and it's coming in the form of smart cities. And if that wasn't enough, it's just interesting. We had a talk about regionalization at one point and councils of governments and those sorts of things that are totally unconstitutional for sure, maybe illegal in some cases. We now have a new organization here in Phoenix called a smart region. And a smart region now is a regional entity that's going to set policy for the entire region, not for just one city. But for all the cities, there's 22 cities in Maricopa County and some 4.5 million people.
Well, let me interrupt you for a second. That is a violation of the 10th Amendment.
It is.
That's usurping a city's power, elected officials' power.
I agree.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I mean, don't you see it the same way? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
I do.
Okay.
It's absolutely patently unconstitutional.
All right. I'm sorry to have taken you off point here, but please return.
No, you're absolutely right. It is unconstitutional, but that hasn't stopped them from doing it. And the smart region concept now is going to sweep the country, it looks like. And I'll see if I can get an article up here.
While you're looking that up, let me ask you another question. In Phoenix, and I'll branch this out to the nation if the answer is in the affirmative.
Yeah.
Is this under the purview of the Maricopa County Association of Government?
They're involved in it, but it's not MAG. It's not that particular organization. the organizations that are involved in this so far, you won't be, now get ready for this, Arizona State University. Are you surprised?
No, not at all.
They have created the Center for Smart Cities and Regions. Okay?
Hmm.
And they're going for it.
Michael,
biggest sustainable development.
Dr. Michael Crow, the president of ASU, is former CIA. Surprise,
yes.
Surprise.
Surprise, surprise. And then you have the Arizona Institute for Digital Progress, a new NGO.
Never heard of it.
That is kind of driving the whole thing. And then you have the Greater Phoenix Economic Council, which is also an NGO.
Right? I've heard of that, yes.
They're all NGOs. Or the ASU. There's no elected bodies here at all. And yet they are standing up saying that they're going to be the smart region platform for Maricopa County and surrounding areas and stuff.
Well, by my count, they've taken away the power of government from city and county and state. That's three right there.
Yes, they have. And, this is no different conceptually than the councils of governments that we see with the Maricopa Association of Governments that we have here. Same footprint, 22 cities, 4.5 million people. And they're going to work closely together. There's no doubt about that because MAG has a lot to do with transportation. And so does the smart region that's being set up here. Because you're going to have all these devices embedded inside of it. And then he got on top of that, Dave, 5G is coming in. And the reason that they're driving the 5G implementation so rapidly around the world is that it's so fast and so broad that it promises literally to light up the so-called Internet of Things, that is all these sensors, including cameras, etc. It's going to light up the Internet of Things like it's never been lit up before. It's going to enable the almost the living, breathing, you know, simulation of everything as it transmits data back to one central point into an AI, you know, some type of an AI system to figure out what's going on. And I'm sure you've seen somewhere over the years the, you know, where NASA is showing off a spaceship or something and they rotate it in 3D. You know, that's kind of like they show the insides of the space shuttle or something and they rotate it like it's a globe or something.
Yeah, I've seen that. You get
the thing from all these different angles. It's pretty cool, really. But picture viewing a city in three or four dimensions, in real time, where you can see everything that's going on in the city, analyze everything that's going on in the city simultaneously in real time. This has never been done before, Dave. And a lot of this stuff's already in place, but 5G is going to completely light this system up. And while most people think 5G has to do with cell phones, that's only a very small part of it. Most of the bandwidth of 5G is going to be sliced off and dedicated to other types of services, like police, for instance, and emergency services. They'll all operate on part of that band in the 5G spectrum. But there will be lots of other things as well, for self-driving cars, for instance. 5G promises to make instant communication between all of the various autonomous vehicles that might be on the road at any particular time. This is really a future shock type of a situation right now. People just cannot comprehend what's ahead.
Donna Hancock sent me some work you had done on this, and I went through it, and I have to tell you, I fully admit to cognitive dissonance, which in the face of new facts, people just turn away and say, oh no, it's not true. But I'm hearing what you're saying, and so you're saying, and I'm not hearing this from other 5G people. This is what's interesting. I know 5G relates to communications networks, but you're saying that just a small part of 5G has to do with cell phone. They're going to be driving our cars? Is that what I'm getting here?
That's exactly right.
No, that can't be.
I know. Let me give you a comparison about 5G. Verizon, I think it was, held a competition to show off 5G, and they invited some of the top gamers in the world to come and play computer games using 5G. And I know you have a Wi-Fi router at home, and you have some kind of a cable router or something that you get your data in. And my guess is you probably run a speed test at some point to see, am I getting what I paid for? I do that all the time. I don't trust my provider very much. So I test my speed all the time. Well, you get three different readings when you do that. The first reading that comes up is called latency, and it's the speed to initiate that first ping back and forth between your target to say, "Yep, I'm listening," and then you know it pings back to you and says, "Yeah, they're listening," and then you transmit data to that point wherever it is out there in the world. And then you have the upload speed. That gives you, your rate of uploading something, and then your download speed. Those three things make up your total bandwidth. The latency factor is what causes the internet to be slow, because every time a packet is sent, it has to send this little ping out, say, packet coming, I'm ready, and it goes back and forth all the time. This is what causes that jerkiness in the internet, like the pause when you look for a web page and you type it in and you hit enter and it sits there and thinks about it. You know, it's like, why are you so slow, you think? But once it starts to come up, boom, it comes up really fast, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the latency factor is what is happening there. If you do a speed test, you're liable to find that that you have a latency a factor of maybe anywhere from 15 to 50 milliseconds. And you say, well, that's not very long, 50 milliseconds even. That's not very long at all. 500 milliseconds would be half a second. But that little, if you have a 30 millisecond turnaround time on your latency, that's probably pretty standard for DSL and most other schemes that you have in your home. The 5G latency has been reduced to... Don't ask me how they did it. I don't know. But the gamers were absolutely freaked out because to them, they were playing their sophisticated games in real time. Literally. They'd hit the shoot button or the action button, and before their finger could even depress it, it was done. And it absolutely blew them away. That's how powerful this new 5G standard is coming out. That's one big reason why they're not listening to anybody right now, by the way, about any other health concerns or anything else, privacy concerns, anything like that. The big telecom carriers are completely ignoring the public and cities, I might add, to implement this because they are so hot to get the 5G on, to light up the Internet of Things where everything communicates. This means that your car can have real-time communication with the cars around it. It means that your car can have real-time communications with everything that's embedded in the side of the freeways and the light poles and stuff as you drive around. And same thing with GPS. You'll have instant location on where you are so that there will be no, much less risk of hitting something or somebody. And this is revolutionizing, literally, it's absolutely revolutionizing the Internet of Things and, the way all these things communicate together.
Yeah, but I don't know. First of all, instant communication between cars may not be a good idea, especially in rush hour. But that aside, the 5G data that I read, and I've interviewed enough people on this, Pat, is that it's deadly. It's going to give us brain cancer.
Well, those charges are out there, but the thing is, nobody really knows for sure because no testing has been done. It makes sense. I'm greatly concerned about the health risk. We already have enough, toxic soup of all radiation around us anyway. I don't think we need any more probably, but, the testing of this has been purposely suppressed. And if there are any negative studies out there, they've been suppressed. And so the people that have come up with the health, if there is a health risk, they really don't have any study data, any kind of peer review data to fall back on, unfortunately. But I will say this, the frequency that's being used for 5G is the same frequency range that's being used for the military's microwave crowd dispersal weapons. You've probably seen those at practice. They shoot this stuff at you, and it makes your skin feel like it's on fire, right? So you turn around, you run like crazy. If you were in a protest or something, and they focused one of these weapons on a microwave weapon, why you would run like a scared rabbit to get away from your skin burning up. It really doesn't burn up your skin, but it feels like it.
This is beyond cruel, but I have read some studies done on other mammals, and it does produce brain cancer in the mammals. And I think it's fair to extract a conclusion and apply it to humans, since we routinely do that in other research.
Oh, yes, you're right. And what it does, at the very minimum, Dave, those kinds of studies call for extreme caution and testing on this current thing before they just blow it out to the public. That's the minimum. And there's no reason for them to say, oh, this is absolutely 100% safe, because there are those studies out there using LTE and 5G, and or not 5G, but 4G and 3G, type of microwave transmission that have produced tumors in rats. And admittedly...
There you go, yeah.
It takes, admittedly, it takes, 8 hours of exposure a day at, where the phone is right next to the rat or strapped to the rat's back.
Well, what do we do in society? We do the same thing.
I know. You're absolutely right. And so, there's enough at least anecdotal evidence with some animal studies out there to say to the industry, we need to be very careful here, and we want to see the testing results before you just go and do it. You should not do it without testing. It would be comparable to releasing a vaccine to the public that hasn't been tested at all.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, where the hell is the FCC and the FDA on this?
They've been bought off.
CDC.
That's the problem.
CDC. I mean, they should all be in here demanding what you're saying.
They're not. They've all been, unfortunately, at this point, they've all been bought off. In fact, the FCC has put up a firewall against cities where cities, and some of them are rebelling against this big time, but where cities cannot sue the carrier for setting the rates. In other words, when a 5G company like Verizon goes out into an area, say the Phoenix area, they go out to the cities and they lease the poles, right? They go out and they make a deal to rent or lease the light poles to put all these transmitters on. Well, normally cities get to call their own shots on that. If they don't want them, they can say no. Or if they say, well, we're going to charge you three times what the city next door charges you because that's our right to do so. You want to come on our town? This is the price. Well, the FCC has blocked cities from having anything to do with rate setting. They have to take what the carrier gives them. And
oh, no, no. That's a Supreme Court case waiting to happen.
Yeah.
That's a private entity co-opting public resources and usurping a constitutionally elected official.
I agree. And I dare say by the time it gets to the Supreme Court, if somebody pushes it that far in that direction, 5G will already be implemented.
Well, then we'll make them take it out. I'll tell you what, I read about these little towers that they put, 5 to 10 houses? And if they put one in my yard, it won't be there long.
Right. Well, they may have to get permission from you to put it that close. But here's the thing. They say that these things are only good for 2,000 feet, right? So they have to put them 2,000 feet apart. And they say, well, that's the maximum limit. And beyond that, they're really not effective. So they're planning on putting them 2,000 feet apart. Now, some sharp engineer did some studies with actual equipment testing, and they found out that the what they claim is a 2,000-foot limit is actually a 3,000-foot limit. So putting them in at every 2,000 feet is overkill, and it will provide a much increased size of toxic radiation potentially than putting them every, say, 2,500 or 3,000 feet. It will also mean, at that closer distance, it also means that there will be more bandwidth available for all these other services that they want to put into it.
Like?
All the other sensors.
Oh, we're going to take over your car now.
That's right.
Let me ask you this. Can they wrestle cars away from your personal control while you're driving them?
Well, if there's no steering wheel, what do you think?
So I'll be sitting in a car with no steering wheel.
Well, that's where they want to go with this.
And if they don't like what I said about them on my show, they can run me right off the cliff, right?
That would be tough, yeah. You never know who's sitting back in the back office somewhere that says, I've been listening to that Dave Hodges guy, and this is the guy that needs to go drive off a cliff.
Are you familiar with the Black Ops weapon called Boston Breaks?
I have no.
I'm not joking when I say this. I've interviewed people about this. Boston Breaks is how a device like a drone or some other base setting can take over the operation of your car and co-opt it and crash it and kill you.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I'm serious. The technology is real. It exists.
Yes.
I'm not the only one to have done interviews on this. And this really opens up Pandora's box here with this. And, you know, I look at technology this way, Pat. I always tell my students, it's neutral. It's just all in how you use it. But I know who's in charge of it. I mean, is this the stuff that came out of DARPA, or is it strictly the telecoms? Where'd it come from?
Well, a lot of the technology that's eating us alive these days is from DARPA. You know, go figure. DARPA is a military agency. It's the black ops of technology, if you will, for the military. They're obsessed with creating super soldiers and, you know, surveillance intelligence type situations and stuff. They're the people, by the way, that originally drove the whole geospatial intel called GeoInt. You remember Jade Helm, right?
Oh, very well, yes.
That's right. Well, Jade Helm was a GeoInt experiment, and they needed a new city and new territories to do it in, because once you do it in another territory, it's spoiled forever. They wanted to do it in a brand new territory. They'd never seen this stuff before. It used artificial intelligence, and they wanted to find out, you know, exactly how sophisticated their AI programs were and how they could track crowds and people and stuff like that. It's geospatial intelligence. It's tracking the people in real time. when this system goes live with 5G and the Internet of Things, the only thing left to introduce are hackers. And there hasn't been enough concern about security on any of this garbage to assure the people that hackers aren't going to do just exactly what you said. And the break weapon that you talk about is going to be completely leapfrogged by what's possible when we go to driverless cars that could be hacked. There's you know, I have to say, and there's already been hacks on these things. Everything can be hacked when you get right down to it. Anything that communicates can be hacked.
Hacked with what kind of implication, Pat?
Well, taking over a car, for instance, when you're driving down the road.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah. It could absolutely raise havoc. Imagine, I mean, we in Arizona, we periodically get pileups because of snowstorms, sandstorms. When they're really, really bad, you know, you hear about a 15 or a 20 car pileup because they lost visibility and they couldn't get off the road fast enough, and they start crashing. Then an 18 wheeler comes along and really creams a bunch of them. And those are all tragic situations. But imagine a freeway at rush hour that, where just one cell at an intersection, say, gets hacked, that can transmit data into all the cars that might happen to be going through the area at that time, and basically just giving them a random virus or a random program or something that just causes them all to pile up. It's, you know, somebody's going to say, oh, that couldn't happen. Oh, yes, it can, because look at everything that's already been hacked. All the smart home technology's been hacked. Banks are being hacked. Central banks are being hacked. The Pentagon has been hacked. The NSA has been hacked. There's nothing in the world that communicates that cannot be hacked. And unfortunately, and I've studied this enough, in different situations, unfortunately, the technocrats that put the stuff together don't seem to care about security. I think they could think about it and be concerned about it, but they're not, apparently. Because they don't put the safeguards in to make sure that their technology is safe, truly, against hackers. Yeah, just my opinion. I'm not a programmer of advanced degree, but you know, that's my opinion.
No, I hear what you're saying though, and I find it very, very disturbing, because there's an implication for people in our industry, Pat, in the independent media. Because if they have this kind of control over the grid, then they can determine who's on the grid and who's not on the grid, who's going to broadcast on the grid through the internet. Mm-hmm. This could lead, this is their answer to complete censorship.
Oh, of course. Of course it is. It's also the answer to social scoring, like credit scoring, like they have in China. Where you have, you know, a way to monitor people real time. You can, assign a dynamic score to them as to what kind of troublemaker they are, or if they're a good little citizen and they don't have any, you know, any resistance whatsoever. This is coming. This is what they're doing in China right now. And if you have a low social credit score over there, you don't get squat. You get kicked out of school. You can't get a good, decent apartment. You won't get on a bus, perhaps, or a train to go anywhere. You can't buy a plane ticket if you're not a good citizen. And they're monitoring everything they do, absolutely everything. Their camera recognition now is so good that if you jaywalk on an intersection, across an intersection, camera will identify you, and you'll get a ticket by mail with a fine attached to it because you've been positively identified.
No, I'm familiar with what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And you know who's behind it in China? It's Google.
Well, they're there.
Is Google going to be behind it here?
Well, look, Google's already doing all kind of stuff here. But, you know, Google's had a big PR problem recently with saying that they're going to develop their search engine, a version of it, for China, which will be totally censored. And even Google employees are saying, don't do that. We don't want to participate with that. And Google seems to be moving forward with it anyway. So Google is there. They're active. They seem to get along just fine with the government over there. And I'll tell you what, in my opinion, you know, I'm Mr. Technocracy, as you know. The reason that Google and the leaders of China get along is that all of them are technocrats. Eric Schmidt, member of the Trilateral Commission, ex-CEO of Google, is a class A1 technocrat. He really is. And all of the leaders of China are technocrats as well. And they're the first fully engineered society on the face of the planet. Not a very good one, but the outcome is very poor for the people. But I believe that's why Google is in love with China.
Because they get to take their evil technology to the full extent.
That's right. Social engineering. That's what technocracy is all about. It was social engineering. That's what they said in the 30s.
Well, let's project this forward a little bit here. Are we looking at becoming a bad version of the old movie Stepford Wives?
A bad version. Well, it could be. You know, scientific dictatorship has been discussed over for almost 100 years. We only see the possibilities of it today with the really modern technology that we have. But I think you could probably get a pretty good idea of how ubiquitous it is by going back and reading Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. That was read in 1932. And he was looking at technocracy when he wrote that. That is the technocracy movement in 1932. It happened to be housed at Columbia University at that point. And so it made a good book for him. You know, I don't know if he knew he was going to sell this many millions of copies when he first wrote it, but it's become a classic now. And we use the term Brave New World all the time.
Right,
we
sure.
Vernacular. It's almost, what do you call it? It's gone beyond just being a slang phrase in America. But that level of control is what we're talking about ultimately. They in Brave New World, the government knew everything, or the machine, if you will, knew everything that was happening. You could not step out of line.
Let me ask you a question here, because I was in a high school the other day and workers were putting cameras in the hallways and the classrooms. Is this part of this too?
It could be.
Because I don't see any need to put a camera in a classroom. You have an adult in there, and they got a call button, and they have a phone. It's just, it's creepy to me. And you know, I'll tell you, it was, gosh, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, that we started joking at our family dinners. We'd say, where have you been on the internet today? Oh, what'd you see? And we'd mention a couple products, and the next day we'd have advertisements from them. We know TVs like Vizio are spying on us in our bedrooms. I mean, this gets freaky. They have data on us when we eat, when we poop, when we have sex, who we talk to, how long we talk, where we travel. Is there anything they don't know about us?
Hardly. In many cases, they know you better than you know yourself.
To what end, though, Pat? I mean, there's a range of possibilities here, don't you think?
Yes, well, there is, but if you the more you understand about historic technocracy and where all this is going with with the concept of sustainable development, 2030 agenda, and all that, this is all wrapped into this. And the more you know about historic technocracy, the more you see what the end game is. The end game is complete control over all the subjects that are in the technocracy area. They called them technates once upon a time, but it's now global. Even though we have individual cities and stuff that are involved in it, it's now a global concept, not just North America. But the technate, which is the subject of social engineering, requires complete 100% surveillance of everything you consume, everything you might make if you're a business person, and control over all the energy you consume as well. By the way, they wanted to use energy as currency. What you see today with all the focus on cap and trade, and they're trying to drive out energy credits, are trying to drive out fossil fuels and stuff. There is no shortage of fossil fuels, as we all know. But you can't control energy unless you contrive a shortage.
Well, there is a shortage of fossil fuels, I know, because in 1973, the mainstream media told me so. And they said by the year 1990, we could be out of oil, so don't mind paying higher prices. Enjoy it while you have it. And it's 28 years after that target date when we're doing this interview.
Yep.
And here it is.
Let me tell you a little secret. I have to throw this in. The guy that invented the peak oil theory, his name was M. King Hubbard. H-U-B-B-E-R-T, no relation to the other Hubbard guy, the Scientology guy, whatever it was. But M. King Hubbard was a guy in 1954 invented the peak oil theory. Okay, just a theory. He was the co-founder of technocracy in 1933 with Howard Scott.
Oh, my.
He was the guy that wrote the book, The Technocracy Study Course, which you've heard me quote from many times. The M. King Hubbard, same guy. You trace all this stuff back, Dave. It all goes back to 1932 in Columbia University. I'm telling you, the more you study historic technocracy, the more you understand where it's going. Oh, here's another one. Elon Musk, right? Create a technocrat, for sure. The guy is absolutely unplugged. He wants to go to Mars, wants to colonize Mars, he wants to dig tunnels all over the place. And he gets most of his money from the government, but hey, you know, he's creative, you know. So Elon Musk, a little bit of an unplugged guy, and almost everybody I've met or talked to says, yep, if there's ever a technocrat, he is it. He's it. His grandfather, Joshua Haldeman, Dr. Joshua Haldeman from Canada, was in charge of the Canadian operation of technocracy during the 1930s. His grandfather. He grew up with that, Dave.
It's a family affair.
It's now, a family affair. He grew up with that. And, you know, how did he learn how to be, learn about technocrat stuff? Well, I'll tell you. How about old Grandpappy? Tell them stories and stuff. I mean, just you can't get away from this stuff. That's why I have stumped for understanding technocracy. You cannot understand the present unless you understand the past and where this garbage came from. These people are really unplugged. They mean what they say, and they say what they mean. They mean they're trying to create utopia that cannot be done.
Well, here's a question I have about 1932. How could these people have foreseen 2018 or even earlier with the internet, with microwave technology? How could they have foreseen this in 1932?
Well, to me, the answer is very simple. They were able to rub shoulders with, for many months, some of the greatest scientific visionaries on the earth at that point in time. And I'll tell you who it was. They were at Columbia University. So it was just one building back in that day. It was called Hamilton Hall. Had a full footprint basement. And in that basement, they used to house temporary projects. In other words, things that aren't going to be there forever. Well, they gave technocracy one half of the basement to put all their people and studies or whatever into, and the other half of the basement, Dave, was occupied by the early iteration of IBM. That's where they built the first tabulator.
Punch cards?
Yep.
Which they very kindly gave to the Nazis to catalog their Jewish guests.
Those were the machines that went to the Nazis. And let me tell you, technocracy jumped the pond as soon as it got started. Technocracy jumped straight into Nazi Germany.
Would you say that the tenets of technocracy favor a dictatorial regime over a democratic regime?
It'll destroy democracy, but it's not meant to be a democratic or a dictatorship type of a government where a person is running it. The system will run it.
Yeah, you've said that before. You said eventually people will step out and it'll all be run by artificial intelligence.
That's right. That's exactly right. And people have suggested that. Dr. Parag Khanna, for instance, the world-class scholar, globalist scholar down at Singapore, has said that very succinctly, that globalization itself is the system. That's sobering thought. Maybe it means more to me than it would the average guy on the street.
No, listen, I'm right there with you. In fact, I think you'll know that by what I'm going to say next, Pat. How do I phrase this? The rise of AI, and we know that they're approaching humans in levels of emotionality, constructive programming, robots building robots. We're talking about a sentient being now. In fact, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, I don't know if you heard this, they just granted robots full human rights. And I'm not joking. That's actually true. Yeah. I reported that on a podcast here recently. But when we look at this situation, are we looking at the system? It's robotic. Is it the system going to be supreme over humans? And is this the science fiction end to how robots take over the world and enslave humans?
I wouldn't go that far to predict that the AI is going to take over humanity, because after all, AI is programmed by people, not by itself. And a lot of the hype that we see that we hear today, I don't think there's a basis in fact for it. It's just hype. But we'll see. But computer scientists that aren't technocrats have studied AI and the output of it and the nature of it and so on. And they've concluded that the AI programs that are being created today apparently seem to inherit all the same biases that their creators had. This is something that's very subconscious, Dave. But if this is true, if you remember the old garbage in, garbage out rule back, 30 years ago, if that's true, that means that AI promises to propagate all of the inherent biases that we have today and just speed them up by orders of magnitude. Things like racism, for instance, and gender discrimination and stuff like that. Those common biases that everybody tends to not like these days.
I still think it's a form of subjugation, and because you're giving control over to not a non-human entity. And in fact, there was a Twilight Zone episode that it wasn't AI. It was humans, but it reflects what I think could happen. And it went like this. A librarian, and they had outlawed libraries. So they brought a librarian played by the late Meredith Burgess to put him on trial. And they wanted to determine, the state was going to determine if he was obsolete. And if he was obsolete, he was going to be put to death. Because of the old Fabian socialist model that if you don't put more into the system than you take out, well, they should do away with you. And so I won't go into any more detail about this, but I could see AI doing this. Are you functional? Are you contributing? Or are you negative? Do you detract? do have a bad influence on other people, and they could eliminate you as you drive your 5G car down the road, or it's driven for you off a cliff.
Well, sure, they can do that to you without having to visit you in person. But that's the only difference. You know, a person can figure all that stuff out, figure out you need to go too. Now they can do it with computers 1,000 times faster.
Could this be the depopulation instrument that people like Ted Turner, who said we need to reduce the human population by 95%, could this be what ushers it in?
If you fast forward to the time of Jacob's trouble and the tribulation, absolutely, it could lead to that. But let me go back and just back a bit. We talked about Brave New World. Aldous Huxley wrote another book in 1958. You may know it. It was called Brave New World Revisited.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And remember that the Huxley brothers, there was Julian Huxley and there was Aldous Huxley, right? They were brothers and very close friends. They worked together on a lot of stuff. And one of the things that his brother Julian Huxley did, he was the very first director of UNESCO at the United Nations. Mm. And you remember what UNESCO stands for. That's a UN education, scientific, and whatever organization, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No Child Left for the Behind, Communist Corps. And yeah, I get it.
Okay, so Julian Huxley was the first director of UNESCO. And both of these guys were big into education. Okay. Now let me read you a short paragraph straight out of the book. This is a quote. The older dictators fell because they could never supply the subject with enough bread, enough circuses, enough miracles and mysteries. Nor did they possess a really effective system of mind manipulation. In the past, free thinkers and revolutionaries were often the products of the most pious orthodox education. This is not surprising. It's all about education right now. The methods employed by orthodox educators were and still are extremely inefficient. Hmm. He wrote this in 1958. Under a scientific dictator, education didn't really work. With the result that most men and women will grow up to love their servitude and will never dream of revolution. Now, let me give you the capstone for this. This is the main takeaway. He writes, there seems to be no good reason why a thoroughly scientific dictatorship should ever be overthrown. Close quote.
I still go back to, if you give an entity more power over you than you have over yourself, they control how long you live, the quality of your life, everything.
Yes. And he was still thinking about the original Brave New World when he wrote this. This was a follow-up to that, to say, well, how good did he do? How good did he predict? Whatever. And this was his opinion in 1938. To me, and I know to you, those are fighting words. We'll see about that, Buster, you know, if it can't be overthrown or not. But his point is well taken. When you look at the technology that seeks to put the manacle around our neck today, once everybody has a manacle around their neck, how do you overthrow it? That's the problem. We could overthrow a communist dictator. We've done it before. We could overthrow a fascist dictator. We got rid of Hitler and Mussolini, right? We can get rid of a human dictator. How do you get rid of a system? You know, where do you go to assassinate it?
No, the system would just cut your food and water off.
I know.
Or cause a natural gas leak in your house.
Well, you know, you remember Space Odyssey.
Dave.
Al, Dave. Please don't do that, Dave.
Open the pod bay doors, Al.
It's like, you ain't coming in, Dave.
Yeah, I think they could have used a different name there, but
it was perfect. Hal, you mean Dave?
Dave.
Oh, yeah, Dave, right. Yeah, Dave is bad. Hal is one letter removed from IBM. That's why they call it Hal.
How funny. That was a movie about technocracy, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, it was. Oh, my gosh, yes.
color me stupid. That just dawned on me.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking about, oh, my. You know, I saw it here, and I shouldn't say this too loudly because my wife might hear this, but I saw this when I was very young and had a crush on a girl, and we went to the movies.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I didn't care too much about the howl on the pod bay door. I like the girl's blonde hair. And now I'm revisiting the topic, and I'm thinking, wow, yikes. And Irene, I hope you've had a nice life. Anyway, Pat, I got to tell you, you lead me to a point. I make a conclusion, and I feel like you push back a little bit on it. This is total control in my mind, and this is why they want all our data. My light just went on. I mean, they're getting data on us, and I think, why the hell do they need to know this? And I just realized why, because they want to control. I mean, what are we going to be, the human slaves?
Well, that's about it. You know, data is the lifeblood of technocracy. I can promise you that. We used to say, follow the money, follow the power. Mm-hmm. Now I say, follow the data, follow the power. But data is the lifeblood of technocracy. And to those people who would create a factory or some type of a, you know, an operation that has machinery and stuff in it, you know, if you own that factory, you know you'd put monitoring devices in place to see what's going on the shop floor.
Of course.
You'd have to.
Of course.
If something breaks, you want to, you know, have the guy go out and replace a part or something. And but if you extrapolate that concept to all society and these madmen that are trying to run it, they have to have, in their minds, if they're going to have a social engineering project, and we're the project, they must have total data domination.
Makes sense.
The way they think.
Pat, hold it right there for a second here, because I need to make an announcement. I don't want to break on this. I want to give a little bonus coverage, but I got to do this for the radio side. Everybody, you're listening to the Common Sense Show here on Global Star Radio Network and all their other outlets. And we've come to the end of this hour, but this is not the end of the interview. We're going to go into some bonus coverage here. So we're going to pause for a minute. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll possibly even carry this over into the last hour of the show. But if you want to hear the remainder of the interview, you'll be able to catch it on Megaphone, and you can access that through Spotify, Google Play, and iTunes.